This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In 1990, the most notorious gang of hackers in cyberspace, the Masters of Deception, was caught. Several members were convicted and spent time in prison. A new book about the gang has just been published. It's called The Masters of Deception, The Gang That Ruled Cyberspace. It's written by my guests Michelle Slatala and Joshua Quittner. Slatala is a reporter for New York Newsday, and Quittner reports for Time magazine. Their book explores the rivalry between the Masters of Deception and another cyber gang called the Legion of Doom. In the second half of today's show, we'll hear from a member of the Masters of Deception, John Lee. An excerpt of Quittner and Slatala's new book appeared in the December issue of Wired magazine, and when the two returned home from their Thanksgiving vacation, they found strange things going on with their phone.
We got hacked, which was a great surprise to us. We returned home from my in-laws on Thanksgiving weekend and were surprised that we were getting no phone calls over a period of 2 days. Finally, late on Sunday night, I called my voicemail at Newsday, and there was this bizarre message from our new tenant, and she was very agitated and upset with us, and she was saying, "I really don't think you have a very funny sense of humor. I'm shocked that when I called and left you a message on your answering machine about an electrical problem in the house that Josh called me back and harassed me and made fun of me. I don't know if you have a very odd sense of humor or if Josh just gets really drunk all the time, but I don't appreciate it." So I hung up the phone and I was really ashen-faced, and Josh said, "What happened? Who died?" And I said, "I think we were hacked." And what happened when we were out of town was that computer hackers got into our New York Telephone phone account, or convinced a New York Telephone employee to make changes in our account, and installed a feature called remote call forwarding. And so every person who tried to call us after that, the calls were forwarded to an answering machine out of state. And a voice answered the answering machine and said, "This is Josh Quittner," and then spewed obscenities and then said, "Leave a message," which is what our tenant had done. And one of the hackers had answered her call by calling her up and harassing her. As soon as we heard the message, we realized what had happened, because the whole hack closely resembled a hack that occurs in Chapter 3 of our book, Masters of Deception. And we called up the phone company and had them fix our phone. What was shocking to us was that all of our friends and relatives who had been trying to call us over the weekend had actually left messages on the machine.
Including my mother.
She heard her son spewing obscenities and then said, "Hi, this is your mother. How are the kids? Hope you got home all right."
So what do you know about who was behind it?
Well, we suspect that it's people who are affiliated with the Masters of Deception, if not outright former members of that group. John Lee actually was in touch with the people who did it, and has a copy of the messages that were left on the answering machine. And he says that his understanding is basically that this was done by people who didn't even want to see the name, much less the picture, of a member of another group called the Legion of Doom in the Wired article that ran that month.
My guests are Michelle Slatala and Joshua Quittner, authors of the new book, Masters of Deception, The Gang That Ruled Cyberspace. Your book is actually about two cyber gangs. What makes these groups gangs? Why do you call them gangs?
These were groups of teenage boys who hung out together, and they were drawn together by their common interest in computers, first and foremost, but using their computers to do things, to, in effect, trespass. And in each instance, they identified themselves as a gang or a crew by a common name. Now, that said, this doesn't mean that you've got 10 guys sitting in a room in front of one computer. Typically, their hacking forays were done alone in their own bedrooms throughout New York City and in other cases throughout the state of Texas. But often after making an attack on a system, they would call each other and trade notes, and their operations began to have more of a a focused objective. They would all turn their attention on a particular target and try and get into it. And then once inside, they would try and set up an internal bulletin board, for instance, that would in effect be an online clubhouse where you could go and leave messages for each other and drop off files and hang out.
You call the Legion of Doom one of the gangs that you write about. You describe them as having been the most revered cyber gang. What were some of their most impressive acts?
Well, the Legion of Doom was really famous because initially they were expert dumpster divers. They used to like to go in the flesh to telephone companies and go through their garbage dumpsters at night, looking for technical manuals and passwords. And then would then take those manuals and technical bulletins and meticulously transcribe them into things that were called files. And you should note here that the word file in hacker speak is spelled P-H-I-L-E, not F-I-L-E, as a kind of homage to the telephone network. In any event, the files of the Legion of Doom were really what gave them their prestige in the underworld. They would drop arcane telephone company acronyms as if they were the native language that these guys spoke. Now, armed with this technical knowledge, an intelligent young hacker could do all sorts of things. If you knew how the telephone system operated, if you could climb inside one of the powerful switching computers that are the backbone of modern telephone networks, there was no limit to what you could do. You could create an unbillable telephone number for yourself. You could add all sorts of features to that number. You could turn the telephone of a rival into a payphone, so that when the poor kid's mom got on the phone to call Aunt Agnes down the block, she would hear an operator say, "Please deposit 25 cents."
Should I be speaking of the Legion of Doom in the past or present tense? Do they still exist?
The Legion of Doom, for all intents and purposes, is defunct. Typically what happens is, as these guys grow up and get girlfriends, they tend to pursue other interests.
Did the Legion of Doom have a code? A code about what was appropriate and what was inappropriate hacking?
I think in general, all hackers...
appropriate and inappropriate illegal activity. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds strange, but I mean, you know, maybe they did have a code.
I think in general, all hackers abide by a very simple code, which is simply, thou shalt not destroy. If you get inside of a system and you're looking around, don't change anything. Don't ruin anything. Don't crash the system.
And to that, I'd like to add, there was a corollary, and that's, thou shalt not make money. I mean, clearly, these were guys who had a high degree of technical expertise that could have been turned to all sorts of use. And there was sort of an unwritten rule that you don't make money off of what you know. You don't sell it. You don't use the knowledge that you've gained to make a buck. Now, we've started to see that change in some fairly dramatic ways, and you see that among the members, or a few of the members of the Masters of Deception.
My guests are Joshua Quitner and Michelle Slatala, co-authors of the new book Masters of Deception, The Gang That Ruled Cyberspace. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about computer gangs with Michelle Slatala and Joshua Quitner. A feud between the Legion of Doom led to the formation of another cyber gang, the Masters of Deception. What happened?
Basically, one young New York hacker, a teenager named Mark Abeni, who lived in Queens, was one of the youngest members ever inducted into the Legion of Doom. There was some kind of internal falling out a few months later between Mark and a Legion of Doom member who lived in Texas, and Mark was essentially kicked out of the Legion of Doom. By that time, Mark had found a group of friends in New York, other hackers who spoke his language. When Mark was kicked out of the Legion of Doom, his new friends, kind of as a joke, said, "Well, we don't need the Legion of Doom, the LOD. We can start our own group, the MOD, the next iteration, and we'll call ourselves the Masters of Deception." It started as a joke, and for some of the members, probably Mark included, it remained more of a joke than a serious, focused group that they were members of.
Until war broke out between the two gangs. What happened?
One day, one of the masters of deception named John Lee, an African-American from Brooklyn, was listening in on kind of a party line conference call where some of the Legion of Doom members were joking around with each other. And John, who had been listening silently for a while, broke into the call and said, "Yo, this is Corrupt from New York," in a very ethnic-sounding accent. He has the ability to mimic lots of different accents and voices. And someone from the Legion of Doom from Texas said onto the party line for everyone to hear, "Get that nigger off the line." And that hit John and the other Masters of Deception like a slap in the face. The way they perceived the incident was these rich or middle-class white kids, these homogenous kids from Texas, were making fun of them. The fact that they were a multiracial, multi-ethnic, I guess a gorgeous mosaic of New York's finest teenagers. And they basically decided that the Texas kids weren't going to get away with it.
So then the Masters of Deception declared war against the Legion of Doom. What did they do?
It was a phone network attack. They singled out the two ostensible leaders of the LOD, a guy named Eric Bloodaxe, that's his online handle, and another guy whose online handle was Doc Holliday. And at first it was constant phone calls at all hours of the night. It took a little bit of doing on the Masters of Deception's part because these guys in Texas all had unlisted phone numbers. But that, as it turned out, was not really difficult for them to hack. They were able to get the unlisted numbers of the Legion of Doom characters and call them, annoying them constantly. Sometimes they would call and one of the LOD guys would pick up the phone and he would find another LOD guy on there because they'd been bridged together. At this point, it was just annoying. It wasn't much more than that. On the other hand, it got worse. Eric Bloodaxe and Doc Holliday decided that they'd had it with the hacking world and they wanted to start their own sort of anti-hacker security firm. And they called it ComSec for computer security. And they started it in Houston with some startup money from a wealthy Houston financier. And they tried to apply their skills to a number of large companies that were having problems with computer security. After all, who better than they would know what companies they were? Well, when John Lee and some of the others in MOD got wind of this, thanks to a story I think in Time magazine and another one in Newsweek, they decided that ComSec would be their new target of attack.
So the Masters of Deception launched an attack by this computer security agency that was founded by two guys from the rival gang, the Legion of Doom.
Right. The sort of seminal moment in that little battle was when Eric Bloodaxe was on a phone call with another famous hacker whose name was Craig Nydorf. And Craig and Eric Bloodaxe were talking about some problems that Bloodaxe had been having and that Craig had been having, and one of them said, "That sounds like something John Lee would do." And all of a sudden, another voice broke in and said, "Yeah, that does sound like something I would do." And it was John Lee, and he had figured out how to eavesdrop on this supposedly two-way call. Well, you can imagine, Bloodaxe went through the roof at that, because here he's selling his skills as a computer security expert, and he can't even guarantee the privacy of his own telephone line.
Meanwhile, the FBI gets onto the case, and they bust the Masters of Deception. How did the FBI crack the case?
Actually, the case was cracked by two security investigators who worked for New York Telephone. They were the very first people to catch on to the fact that computer hackers were getting inside the phone system. Two guys named Tom Kaiser and Fred Staples, who put dial number recorders, little black boxes essentially, on the phone lines of the Masters of Deception. And the little black boxes kept track of every phone number that the kids dialed, every call that came into their house, the duration of the calls, and the time and date. And what the phone company investigators realized was that these kids were essentially making calls to private New York Telephone and AT&T and other phone company computers. They were calling them up and staying on the lines with their computers talking to the phone company computers for hours at a time, basically getting inside the phone company computer systems and exploring. It's like going into a church and exploring the architecture inside the sanctuary.
But the problem that the telephone company investigators had was they could follow the calls into their own computers, but once they were inside, they didn't know where they went. It was pretty difficult for them to follow these kids around inside these powerful switching computers, and it terrified them. But now they're presented with a problem. Do they block access and not let these hackers in? But in doing so, they'd lose the hackers, A, and B, they wouldn't really know the extent of their own security flaws. Or do they leave the system open and attempt to follow them around in various kinds of sophisticated ways?
So what Kaiser and Staples did was to basically spy on the kids inside the system as much as possible. And at the same time, they called in the federal authorities, the Secret Service, which actually has jurisdiction over credit card fraud.
Telephone company investigators were on the case of the Masters of Deception. And then with the help of the Secret Service, they cracked it open. They found the guys, brought the guys to trial. The guys pled guilty. So what was the significance of this case in cyberspace?
This case sent a message. Up until this point, computer hackers all around the world, or at least in this country, believed that the phone company was asleep at the switch, and that if you were caught, if by some wild fluke you were caught browsing around in computer systems, you'd be given a slap on the wrist. Well, what this case said was the phone company is not asleep at the switch, and the criminal justice system is going to take these crimes very seriously. You will be caught, you will be prosecuted, and you will be sent to jail.
How are they sentenced?
Mark, all the kids got prison sentences except for one of the five who had agreed to testify against the others, and so he was given a suspended sentence. Mark was sentenced to a year in jail, Mark Abeni, Fiber Optic, and John Lee was also sentenced to a year in jail, too. A lot of people have problems with that. A lot of people believe that since this was not a crime that involved money, it was not a crime that involved violence, it was not a crime that involved individuals getting hurt, that jail was a pretty stringent thing to throw at these kids.
What specifically was the crime they were charged with?
They were charged with conspiracy and computer trespass and crimes that are connected to those two broad categories.
Against the phone company?
Against the phone companies, as well as against some of the most sensitive and powerful computer systems in the U.S. Everybody from Martin Marietta Missile Group to TRW and Bank of America were hit by these guys.
So what do you both think? You think the punishment fit the crime?
Well, we actually disagree about whether they committed a crime. I think that what they did was a crime and there should be laws against it. If basically these kids were to physically break into my house while I wasn't at home and walk around in all my rooms and look in my medicine cabinet and my underwear drawer and then leave without moving anything or destroying anything before I got home and I didn't know they were there, I would still feel like they had invaded my privacy and that it was illegal. That was essentially what these kids did to private computer systems.
The internet is still pretty young, and you know, we learn a little bit more every day about what it's capable of and what surprises it has in store for us. How worried are you about what computer outlaws and cyber gangs will be like in the future?
I don't believe that we have much to fear. I mean, I know that there is one gang that's out there now that calls itself the Posse, and I know that they've been collecting thousands and thousands of passwords. And I believe that there are investigative agencies that are hot on their trail. I don't really know what you could do with the passwords. At the moment, there isn't that much sensitive data that's out there. And companies that have sensitive data should be aware by now that if they're going to put their systems online, then they're going to have to make their systems secure. So the problem really resides with the company. For that reason, I think we're going to be okay.
Michelle?
That said, I think that hackers can sometimes unintentionally do harm. I mean, we talked about how the masters of deception really wanted just to get inside systems and look around them. There was one incident where unwittingly some members of the Masters of Deception crashed a public television station's computer network and brought it down. I think the implications for the future are that we're all going to worry a lot more in a generalized sense about a hacker menace. But when you try to quantify the harm that the menace does, you come up pretty empty-handed.
For instance, our book begins on Martin Luther King Day 5 years ago, and AT&T is suffering from the worst outage in its history. In fact, it still hasn't been surpassed. Half of all the calls that were placed that afternoon weren't completed because the network was falling apart. And Secret Service and law enforcement folks were racing around thinking, my God, did hackers do this? At the same time, in their apartments in Queens, Mark Abeni and Paul Styra are sitting there thinking, my God, did I do this? Because both of them, for the 6 months prior to that crash, have been fooling around in very sensitive AT&T routing computers. Well, it turns out that, no, they didn't do it. It was AT&T's problem. It was AT&T's fault. I would still argue that we have a lot more to fear from computer programmers, legitimate computer programmers misprogramming their equipment and computers that don't work the way they should, than computer hackers.
Joshua Quittner and Michelle Slatala are co-authors of Masters of Deception, The Gang That Ruled Cyberspace. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.